Good afternoon. The City Council come back from recess. It is still Wednesday, July 25th, 2012, and it's 2 p.m. Sue, how are you?
Very well. Thank you. What
would you have for lunch?
Oh, I had a salad today. Good. Went up to the farmer's market.
Did you? Was it organic?
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, Emily.
And how do you know it was organic?
Why, because of the signs.
Okay.
of course, yeah.
Can you please call the roll?
You hear that, Commissioner Saltzman? The
yeah,
sign.
Yeah. I was up there, too. I still haven't seen the sign. Sue's a regular there.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. Can you please read the title for a resolution, item number 867.
Adopt the recommendations contained within the Sullivan's Gulch Trail Concept Plan.
This is a project that Commissioner Fish and I have been working on with other council offices and other organizations. So I'm going to say a few words by way of introduction and then turn it over to him to take us from there. High-quality trails that connect Portlanders to where they work, live, and play are an essential ingredient of Portland's long-term plans for a healthy and sustainable city and equitable city. East of the river, Portland has two high-quality trails going east-west, the Marine Drive Trail on the Columbia River at the north end and the Springwater Trail at the south end. These trails provide active transportation connections and are extremely popular and valuable investments for the region. Since 1987, maybe even before, residents and planners have looked at Sullivan's Gulch as a potential place for a trail that would run through the heart of the east side and connect major jobs, housing centers, including the Central City, Hollywood, and Gateway, and the transit centers built around Max Light Rail. A high-quality trail in Sullivan's Gulch would also connect to the two major north-south trails east of the river, the East Bank Esplanade, and the I-205 path. This is all, of course, in addition to connecting to Portland's network of bike lanes, sidewalks, neighborhood greenways. The Sullivan's Gulch Trail will also provide an important connection from Portland's western neighborhoods to the future Gateway Green site. In 2011, more than $200,000 was awarded to the City of Portland from the Federal Transportation Funds to study whether a trail in Sullivan's Gulch is possible. The Portland Bureau of Transportation and the Portland Parks and Recreation used the funds to engage the community surrounding the trail, advocates for more efficient transportation, Gulch property owners, and elected officials to create a plan that answers an important and difficult question. If there was to be a Sullivan's Gulch Trail, where would it be located and what would it look like? After months of public outreach, stakeholder conversations, and engineering and planning work, city staff have a Sullivan's Gulch Trail concept plan to present to the City Council and the public. The plan shows that a trail in the gulch is feasible, includes the recommended location for a trail, and points along the trail concept where it would connect with neighborhoods and existing transportation routes. Building a trail in Sullivan's Gulch, no doubt, has lots of upsides, but it also presents challenges. Nearly three-quarters of the right-of-way needed to build the trail is owned by stakeholders other than the City of Portland, and the terrain is often steep and requires the construction of retaining walls. The rough estimate for the total cost of the trail, and this is a very low-confidence early estimate for those of you writing histories of the city, is $36 million for almost 6 miles of high-quality trail. The Sullivan's Gulch Trail concept presents unique opportunities, though, consistent with the Portland plan, providing Portlanders with safe, efficient, and sustainable ways to move around the city. I'm very pleased to have worked with how our staffs in the Bureau of Transportation, the Bureau of Planning, worked with the staffs in the Bureau of Parks and Commissioner Fish on this concept plan, and I'd like to turn it over to Commissioner Fish at this point.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I had the pleasure of joining 150 policymakers last Friday on a bike ride through East Portland. In fact, Linda Robinson and I are still recovering from that bike ride. But we saw firsthand the importance of our off-street transportation network. The Sullivan's Gulch project is a complex project that's been over a decade in the making. But it is, as the mayor has stated, a wonderful example of the partnership between PBOT and Parks. And while some may view this as an expensive proposal over time, we see it as a key piece of our trails network. And we know that the investment in a project of this magnitude will be worth every penny to future generations. It's now my honor to introduce the team that will present to us this afternoon. Paul Smith, the project manager from PBOT, Sarah Huggins from Parks, Denver Igarta, and Elizabeth Kennedy Wong. Not Elizabeth Kennedy Wong, but,
she's not
Elizabeth,
coming.
Raise your hand so we know that you're here. Thank you. And Alejandro Vidalas, who did some outreach. Alejandro, welcome. Gentlemen, ladies, take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, Mayor, members of the City Council. Let's move. So the trail alignment follows the Interstate 84 Banfield Freeway Corridor. It would connect the I-205 bike path and Gateway Green to the East Bank Esplanade and the future North Portland Greenway Trail. In the future, the trail is also envisioned to extend to 122nd Avenue. The purpose of this project was to determine if a trail was feasible in this corridor, and if so, to determine a recommended alignment. The concept of the Sullivan's Gulch Trail has been a community priority for more than 15 years, and that would be starting with the bike plan and the regional trails plan about 1996. A project advisory committee was formed to work with the staff and the consultant to develop the plan, and we have members of the project advisory committee who will speak after us to tell you about how that process went. The Bureau of Transportation and Parks and Recreation collaborated to staff the development of the plan. And most of the plan was prepared over 8 months, from June 2011 to February 2012. The Project Advisory Committee met 5 times and endorsed the final concept plan at their February 2012 meeting. These are the principles that were developed by the Project Advisory Committee to guide the development of the trail concept, the location, and the design. And members of the committee will tell you about that. It is a multi-use path for both bicycles and pedestrians, and for multi-purpose uses, recreation, transportation. What had not been done before was to actually try to site the trail. So there was a technical evaluation that was prepared. So under the direction of city staff, consultants from a team headed by CH2M Hill prepared a digital terrain model that was 6 miles long, one of the largest digital terrain models that's been developed. And the topography came from processed LIDAR imagery. This is high-quality aerial photography, although, as the mayor knows, the BlackBerrys got in the way a little bit in some of the line work.
We're going to procure a goat herd to get those BlackBerrys under control. Thank you, Metro, for agreeing to pay for that. That's very nice of you.
And so the trail was sited three-dimensionally and based on the topographic constraints. The drawing at the bottom of the slide shows generally that the trail would be offset from the center of the existing freight railroad about 30 feet to the north. So looking at the entire alignment, this breaks down the property ownership. And as the mayor said, only 26% of the trail is actually located on property currently owned by the City of Portland. We will show you in the next slide 5 distinct locations along the trail. And as the mayor said, we will part of the project was to determine what the trail would look like. And so we hope these visual images will help do that for you and the public. So beginning in the east, the trail would connect on the right, upper right, if you will, to the existing Interstate 205 multi-use path and Gateway Green, which is the area just above the end of the turquoise line. The area between I-205 and 84 is Gateway Green, which is a 35-acre open space and recreation area. The trail would then go underneath the I-205 span on ODOT property. The second example, as we move to the west, is what we call the Jonesmore segment. This segment of the trail is primarily on city property within the Jonesmore Street right-of-way. And this cross-section illustrates, on your right, you see a Union Pacific locomotive on the single-track freight line. Union Pacific property goes 50 feet to the north of the freight line, and the trail would be just outside the UP right-of-way on city property on, as I said before, a right-of-way owned by the Bureau of Transportation. Moving a little further to the west, we have an industrial area in the vicinity of 60th Avenue, and again, we're showing the trail continuing along the north side of the gulch. And this is a cross-section of that location. The trail would be in the northern part of the Union Pacific right-of-way, offset horizontally from the freight line by about 27 and a half feet. The trail would be supported by a retaining wall with a fence and would be about 21 feet higher than the railroad tracks. In about the center of the corridor, in this drawing, we show the trail in the vicinity of the Hollywood Town Center, near the light rail station and the transit center. So in addition, we have this cross-section, but we also have a visualization to show you after that. The building that you see is the 24-hour fitness center at adjacent to the Hollywood Transit Center. So again, like at 60th, the trail would be in the northern part of the Union Pacific right-of-way. It would be offset from the freight rail center line by 30 feet. In this case, the trail would be about 10 feet higher than the railroad tracks. This is really, I think, one of our best products that a lot of people, it really shows them what would the trail look like. Well, this is pretty close to what it would look like. So rather than the cross-section, you now see a photograph taken in the winter on a nice blue sky day in the winter. And we used the terrain model and software called SketchUp to fit the trail into the photograph. And somewhere in there is Bud Clark on one of the bicycles.
Paul, can every member of the council get a JPEG of this photograph?
You bet.
I think for all of us, is a showstopper in the report.
And we issued that with our press release to the media, this particular
you
illustration.
You think you could have spent a few more pennies and got rid of some of the blackberries on either side? I guess you were trying to teach us a lesson.
Right? That's right. That's right. Well, it's a good fruit, you know. Okay, so moving a little further on, and the trail alignment here is shown between Northeast 16th and Grand Avenues, and similar to Jonesmore, this portion of the trail would also be on city property. This property is also owned by the Bureau of Transportation and is considered part of the Lloyd Boulevard right-of-way. Now, in the cross-section, you notice before I mentioned that at 60th, the trail was 20 feet higher than the tracks, and at Hollywood, it was 10 feet higher. Here, it is 60 feet higher. So this is the deepest part of Sullivan's Gulch through the Lloyd District. We worked with our advisory committee, and they have recommended two trail locations here, not one or the other, but both. And as you look, go back to the drawing before here just one second, you'll see that the two paths diverge from each other on the right-hand side of the drawing. If you want to access any of the streets in the Lloyd District and you're coming from the east, you would exit there, and then you could connect to every street along the way. If you were going through to Grand Avenue or beyond, you would stay on the lower trail. And in the cross-section, you can see that the upper trail is an extension of the back of the sidewalk at Lloyd, also supported by a retaining wall. And then down the slope, you see a second trail location. And both of those are on city property. And this is the visualization of that lower trail through the Lloyd District.
I saw it earlier.
So as we wrap up the last few slides, the resolution before you asks that you adopt the recommendations contained within the Sullivan's Gulch Trail Concept Plan. These are a summary of the recommendations. They concern adopting the recommended alignment, directing city staff to incorporate the alignment in the update of the city's comprehensive plan, and seeking funding to design and construct segments of the trail. The resolution and Exhibit B include direction to prepare amendments to the zoning code map, the comprehensive plan, and the transportation system plan to reflect the trail, bicycle, and pedestrian classifications shown on this slide. And then in closing, we wanted to give you an example of a segment of the Sullivan's Gulch Trail that city staff believe has independent utility. That means if this segment were built, in and of itself, it provides significant utility for transportation trips. And as I explained it, I think you will agree with me. Building this segment of the trail, which is shown in red, would connect East Portland to Northeast Portland, specifically the Tillamook-Hancock Bikeway, which leads to the central city. And the only route now available is Halsey Street overpass over I-205, which is not a very friendly place to bike or walk. So by going under off the 205 path, under 205, and then up the open space that you'll see in more detail is a great alternative, we think, to that. So the Transportation Bureau with the support of Parks has submitted a letter of interest seeking state and or federal funds to construct this segment of the trail and a connector to the Northeast Hancock Street, all on ODOT property. So the last slide zooms in a little more so you can see in more detail. It shows how the trail would connect the existing 205 path and Gateway Green on the right, go under 205, and then north to connect to Northeast Hancock Street. And the open space on the left-hand side or west side of 205 is that connector. And you'll see where it ends, that's a cul-de-sac of Northeast Hancock Street. So by making that very short connection, that hook, you've just connected East Portland to Northeast Portland via a safe off-road route. So I know the Commissioner's staff, Commissioner Fish's staff, and the Commissioner Fish and the mayor were real excited when we jointly came up with this particular facet. So it is a difficult project, but this is a good example that there are ways to begin to immediately implement the recommendations of this plan.
We can either go into questions and answers for staff now, or we also have six members of the community who would like to say a few words.
Why don't we go to the community, and if you could stick around, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll introduce.
Thank you.
So I'll introduce these folks. First three are Walter Lurch of East Portland, Dan Lurch Walters of the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association, and Cynthia Gomez of the Latino Network.
Welcome. Hi, welcome. Would you like to begin, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Walter Lurch. Mayor Adams, council members, thank you for giving me this opportunity to comment. I've lived in the Hazelwood neighborhood of East Portland, or I still live there. I have recently served my community as a member of the Sullivan's Gulch Citizens Advisory Committee, a member of the East Portland Action Plan Bicycle Subcommittee, and as treasurer of Eastminster Presbyterian Church. Eastminster hosts the Family Winter Warming Center in partnership with Human Solutions. And this year, we opened a 100-plot community garden in partnership with Grow Portland. As a longtime East Portland resident, I can speak with firsthand knowledge of the significant increases in the amount of both bicycle and pedestrian traffic in the East Portland neighborhoods. The increases are noticeable not only during our beautiful summers, but also during our cold, windy, and rainy seasons. Neighborhood residents commuting, running errands, or getting some healthy exercise, or all three, day and night. The Citizens Advisory Committee worked many months planning the trail from the East Bank Esplanade to to the 205 multi-use path. Extensive discussions helped create a trail plan that has appropriate connections to the neighborhoods, minimizes conflicts with existing automobile traffic, considers the needs of pedestrians and bicyclists, whether their use is recreational, community, commuting, or running errands, supports traffic flow into the 205 path at the planned Gateway Green, facilitating travel to parks and residences in East Portland and to Gateway Transit Center in the east, and then from the Esplanade to the west. The Sullivan's Gulch Trail is a critical next step in the much-needed build-out of the bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure in East Portland and outer East Portland. Not insignificantly, the proposed trail further enhances Portland's reputation as a great place to live and work and a great place to visit and explore. In closing, I again want to thank the council for giving me this opportunity to comment, and I ask the council to approve the recommended Sullivan's Gulch Trail and continue to move this project forward. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, very much.
My name is Dan Lurch Walters. I am a stakeholder in that my property will be bisected by the trail, and I am an enthusiastic supporter. I was asked to talk a little bit about the history of Sullivan's Gulch and the trail. I'm not quite sure how far back to go. Let's see, on the seventh day, God rested. Two million years ago, there was the boring lava field that created Rocky Butte and Mount Tabor.
Pangaea, don't forget Pangaea.
In about 15 to 11,000 years ago, the Missoula flood came and carved the gulch. It went right over the top of the Rocky Butte, but then was stopped from going any further south by Mount Tabor. Otherwise, there's never been water running through the gulch. The land goes, the layers of land go away from the gulch because of how it was formed. So it's not something that collects water generally. Timothy Sullivan, about 1850, had a donation land claim that went from Halsey to Stark between 19th and 28th. His son sold a 100-foot right-of-way to the railroad, the Oregon-Washington Railroad and Navigation Company, which was bought up by Union Pacific about 1898. Businesses started moving in. Dornbecker, located about 1900. There was actually a cycle track where there was a stadium and a cycle thing about 21st and Multnomah many, many years ago, about 1900. The streetcars were developed to promote neighborhoods, and there was one through our neighborhood, too. The expressway, the Banfield, was considered as early as 1926, and in the 30s, there was a shanty town down there with about 300 people and one phone. Yeah. The last shack was torn down by about 1941 when they were getting serious about building the freeway that opened in 1955. It's about the same time that the last electric railway in Portland closed down. In the 70s, people started breaking away from the freeway idea, and Portland started taking freeways out and so forth. In 1987, the Sullivan's Gulch Neighborhood Association included in its action plan the idea of a trail through the gulch. I moved into the gulch in 1991, and there was a 2004 PSU study that really laid the groundwork. Mel Huey identified the trail to some Portland State students as a potential to study. They went through and said, yes, it can be done, and we jumped on that. We formed a committee in 2005. Brad Perkins invited a bunch of us, Susan Hathaway Marxer, myself. If I start naming names, I'm going to run out of time here. But a lot of people have worked almost monthly since then to promote the trail. We've been meeting with parks. We've been meeting with transportation, with the mayor's office. And we have received a whole bunch of support from the city. Very few people that we talk to are negative on the trail. There are questions. Where's the money coming from? What's it going to look like? We were able to receive some MTIP funds for this work, which really brought us to where we are today. And we have been able to talk to the stakeholders up and down the gulch, the different neighborhood associations on both sides, and gotten their support throughout this process. We've talked to major property owners. Fred Meyer has a letter of support in your packet. Also, Capstone Partners is building something at the Albina Fuel site at 33rd and Broadway. They're very excited to include the trail in their plans. And we, as a neighborhood association, are excited to see this built. We would particularly like to see an early stage built between 25th or 21st and the river, which would serve our neighborhood very well. But we want to share the gulch with everybody, including East Portland. Some of the people that have been instrumental in this along the way, Mel Huey with Metro, Mia Burke with Alta, have been there for a long time. Bill Barber, Roger Geller, Dave Brook with the Sullivan Gulch Neighborhood Association, current president, is also a transportation advocate. Morgan Will has worked with us on the trail. And the Lloyd TMA gave us a grant of $7,000 or $8,000, which we turned over to the Bureau of Transportation as part of the MTIP funds. I want to thank you for all of your support in this. Let's move this forward. Let's find the funding. Let's break ground on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you for that history. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, commissioners. My name is Cynthia Gomez, and I work as the Program Director of Leadership and Civic Engagement Programs at Latino Network. Our mission is to provide transformative opportunities, services, and advocacy for the education, leadership, and civic engagement of our youth, families, and community. I'm also a member of the Sullivan's Gulch Trail Advisory Project Advisory Committee, and I live one block south of the 60th Avenue MAX station in the proposed Sullivan's Gulch Trail, and I'm a member of the Portland Comprehensive Plan Infrastructure Policy Expert Group. I applied to be a member of this committee because I felt it would be a great opportunity to get Latinos on the move and improve health through the creation of a safe multi-use trail that is comfortable and accessible for a range of users. Initially, my concern was that it would become a bike freeway and not really family friendly. While the concept of the trail has been identified as a community priority for more than 15 years, I quickly realized as I was vetting the project with my community members that low income and communities of color had little say or even knowledge of the project, and this was a concern for us. It was wonderful to see that we had representation on the committee, as well as the immigrant and refugee community organization through Lyle's participation, I don't think he's here today. Conversations that challenged the committee to think about equity issues led to conversations with park staff about how the Parks Bureau could improve services for Latino community members who may underutilize the Portland park systems and trails. This led Portland Parks and Recreation to start a collaboration with Latino Network. The goal was to solicit feedback from Latino community as to how the park system could be improved. Latino Spanish-speaking park staff, Alejandro Vidales, who's here with us today, worked closely with Latino Network and moved to plan the first ever Latino Family Day. The event took place in April of this year at Mount Scott Community Center in Southeast Portland, and to our utter delight, nearly 240 parents and children were in attendance. The event featured swimming, roller skating, basketball, arts and crafts, music and dance performances, a raffle and a resource fair. Commissioner Nick Fish was there, and Parks Director Mike Abate addressed the crowd. Members of Latino Network's Leadership Academy collected 60 Spanish language surveys developed by the Parks Bureau that sought to better understand the interests and needs of the community. The success of the event prompted future events for similar days in other park locations. One occurred just this last month in North Portland at Pier Park, and the next event will occur at Mount Scott Park on August 4th, and you're all invited to join us. Latino Network views this as a great example of how city bureaus, when committed to equity, can operationalize an equity agenda. I think that this trail is a great idea. I think we need to move forward carefully and thoughtfully and include the thoughts of the community and their feedback, which is very important. The most common feedback I heard from folks was that, why are we building this trail when I don't even have a sidewalk outside of my house? So that was the biggest concern. So I just want to make sure that I let you all know that was something that they said over and over and over again. I support this trail, and I hope that it moves forward. And I look forward to seeing it. And if I don't get to see it in my lifetime, I hope that my children get to ride their bikes down it one day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for your participation.
We also have Garrett Kransky of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, Linda Robinson of the East Portland Parks and the Gateway Greenway, and Mary Ann Casson, a member of the Parks Board.
Do you need your help in a city council?
Mayor Adams, members of the commission, my name is Garrett Kransky. I'm the advocacy director with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I want to thank you for the invitation and opportunity to speak today, obviously in support of the Sullivan's Gulch Trail Plan. The Bicycle Transportation Alliance is focused on providing safe, convenient, and accessible facilities for people to ride bikes all throughout the city and the state. And clearly, the Sullivan's Gulch Trail concept does that. In addition, it represents a world-class project. So it's the kind of safe, separate facility that really is a cut above some of the other projects you might see on our on-street network. And it's the logical next step in the path of Portland's success in engaging and encouraging people to get out and ride their bikes. We've had a lot of people out. We still do. And I think we've got a higher bar to clear to encourage families, younger children, honored citizens to get out and ride. We're going to have to provide opportunities like this trail where they feel safe and separate from fast-moving cars. And that, I think, is a noble challenge, and it's great to see the Parks Bureau and Bureau of Transportation working together to come up with strategies to help us get there. So, and of course, you know, the example that rises to the top of my mind is for anyone who's been out on a ride or a walk on the Springwater Corridor and seen the family-friendly nature of that path between Sellwood and downtown Portland, you really get a sense of how much we stand to gain by making these kinds of critical investments, and especially in the context of connecting East Portland to that fantastic facility, as well as to the I-205 multi-use path. That's the kind of connectivity and forward-looking approach that we really, really appreciate seeing at the city. I also will hope that some in City Hall would be motivated by a challenge. Last year, Bicycling Magazine rated Minneapolis, Minnesota as the number one city for cycling. Now, they've since corrected the error in their ways, and
they were drunk.
Have it on good authority.
That's my story. Momentary lapse.
This year we're back on top, but one of the reasons they cited for rating Minneapolis so high was because their investment in trails. And so, you know, that's just something to keep on our radar, that we've done great with our on-street network, but the trails are really where we stand a chance to grow. And so I hope members of City Hall and across the street will look to the Bicycle Transportation Alliance as an ally when it comes time to find funding for this great project. We'd really be happy to continue our support beyond this conversation. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'm Linda Robinson. I live in East Portland in the Hazelwood neighborhood. And I'm here today to speak to the value of this project to the Gateway Green and the connection, that very important connection. And I was pleased to see particularly the part at the end where you're recommending that access point be built soon. We had a study done less than a year ago, Friends of Gateway Green, to look at various potential additional access points that we might add to Gateway Green, and which and how many more people under the age of 18 would be then within a half a mile. And we looked at four different access points, and that's the one that really came out on top as providing better access, not just to Gateway Green, but to the bicycle path. I mean, it's true. It's very difficult to get to the 205 bicycle path from the west side for about a two-mile stretch there. So that's a really important connection, and I'm glad to see that it's moving forward. To me, I also thank you for mentioning that the part that you presented today is not the entire length of the Sullivan's Gulch Trail. There is another one-mile section that we still need to determine the alignment of that will connect it from the I-205 path to the I-84 path that starts at 122nd Avenue and goes east from there. So we still have another section to work on later. Just wanted that in the record. The other thing is, you know, I'm a novice bicycle rider. I didn't learn to ride a bike until several years into this Gateway Green process after I was already on Social Security and Medicare. So these off-road paths are really important to folks like me who are still scared to death, white-knuckled, if I have to ride on the bike path along a place like Northeast Halsey. I don't do it. So I'm, you know, once you get your neighborhood greenways in, which are going to go into some of them in one near my house next year, then I'll be able to get to Gateway, and from Gateway, eventually, if I live long enough, I'll be able to take the Sullivan's Gulch Trail into town. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. Mayor Adams, members of the council, my name is Marianne Kasson, and I'm here in three roles today. The first one is I'm a member of the Parks Board, along with Linda, and I served on the Citizen Advisory Panel. And in that role, I want to thank the members of the staff. I think they did a great job. Our discussions were not always easy. As you can imagine, there were a lot of tough issues we covered. I was very glad to see we were so inclusive and welcoming to diverse communities, and we tackled some of the tough issues. What were our goals, and was it going to be a freeway for bikes or something else? So we toughed it out. We had some great, well-attended open houses, and I think it was a great process. As a member of, in my day job these days, I work for Metro, and I want to say how well-supported this plan is in various documents over at Metro. It's one of regionally adopted plans, so that's an important distinction. It's a regionally adopted trail. It also shows up in the RTP, and it's part of a package of 20 key trail packages that a Blue Ribbon Trails Committee recommended highly just a couple of years ago, so that's an important component. Finally, as a citizen, I wanted to say that I'm one of those demographics. I'm one of those people that will ride in the bike lane. I will take the lane when I need to, but I know that's not common in my demographic, and I think these separated trails are really important. And as you've probably already heard, these trails serve much more of a purpose than getting from point A to point B. They really, really do connect communities. I know in my past life, back in the 80s when I worked for the city, I wrote the Springwater Master Plan, and in those days, it was an abandoned rail corridor, and it really, really brought the community together. It was a far-reaching dream. Everyone working on it thought, how can this possibly ever happen? And the community pulled together. We had wise leadership then, as we do now. So we've done the hard work. We turn it back to you and say, get her done. We're right behind you. Thank you.
Thanks for all your work on this for so many years.
If you want to take questions or otherwise, there's...
Invited to... We have people signed up.
Well, we have people signed up.
Yeah. How many people have signed up?
Four.
Great.
Will these people come up, please? Brad Perkins, Terry Parker, Bob Richardson, and Tamara DeRitter. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Yeah.
Mr. Perkins, would you like to begin?
Thank you.
I'm Brad Perkins of Perkins Realty. I'm also president of Cascadia High Speed Rail. In this great introduction so far, I just want to emphasize that we got here because a small little group has met in living rooms and Metro for the past 6 years. And it was through our efforts that got the MTIP money to get us to where we're at today. And that's great. That's community action at its finest, okay? And I know it's easy to give accolades when the job is done, but you got to remember that the people on the ground got us to where we're at. For instance, The concept plan, it's great up to this point, but there's not enough talk or even mention in the concept plan about where we go from here. The engineering aspect is vital to get going on. The funding on the 205 to Hancock is just one small part of what's needed. And by the way, it really isn't part of the Solomon's Gulch plan. It's actually a connection to the Greenway, which is great. But we really do need to focus our efforts on this whole new network system that's part of a network throughout the Portland area. And we're talking about a network that can be tied into rails, I mean high-speed rail, as well as street rails, in-city rails as well as intercity rails, that you would end up at the nodes where you have the bridge crossings, where these paths go underneath the viaducts on I-84, great opportunity for bike-oriented development. Okay, what does that mean? How do I draw a picture? Well, it's pretty easy. You don't have parking for cars. You actually have parking for bikes. You get out of your space. You're short in time. You go down the elevator, jump on the bike, and you're gone on this network to downtown, probably from 21st in less than 10 minutes. That is revolutionary. Okay, so how do we get there? How do we begin getting funds for this? Okay, and we really got to put our thinking caps on and how might we do this differently? Okay, and I don't want to be fighting other departments in order to try and get this money. Maybe we can do it with a partnership. Okay, major property owners along the way, like Providence, John Rampakis, Joe Weston, Joe Angel. All these people, and Capstone on 33rd, all these people have a lot of money that could help build this thing, okay? And they could also reap some benefit through increase of zone, increase height levels, maybe reduction on the CDCs.
So your time's up.
I'm sorry, I got a few more minutes, if you don't mind. I spent, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours on this, Sam, and I appreciate just a few more minutes, if you don't mind.
Brad, why don't you summarize the points you want to make?
If I'm not being helpful in what I'm saying and trying to move forward, I respect what you're saying. You know, shut down, Brad. But I have a lot of information here. I probably have another minute, if you don't mind.
Summarize the points you want to make.
Okay, how do we begin working with the railroad? Okay. What you have to do is be part of a plan that really gets the railroads interested. If they're getting something in return, i.e. straightening out the railroad tracks down by the river, which is in the north-northeast quadrant plan, to draw a connection between the Rose Corridor and the river, if that railroad track moved back and the city was helpful in that, there's an incentive. Okay, if there's a new bridge, a multimodal bridge across the Columbia River that includes freight rail as well as high-speed rail and cars and trucks for a new system in line with the current freight rail bridge, then we're talking a revolutionary change here too and getting the railroads actually interested on this little measly little bike trail that they're not interested in giving us any permission on using the right-of-way unless they are given something. It's just a regular real estate deal. Both parties have a benefit by a deal being made. Okay, so we have these opportunities. It's a matter of putting our heads together and finding other resources and using the resources that we have both on change of zoning and getting major property owners interested in making this happen. Okay, the hard part is still ahead though, and we really need to roll up our sleeves as community, businesses, and the city to make this happen. I'll end by saying that Copenhagen, a paper last week, are planning 26 corridors through their city to get to the downtown. Those 26 corridors were planned by city planners, okay? Not us out in the community, you know, trying to make a living and volunteer our time to make these things happen. It was pushed by the city, and I hope there is more assertiveness on the city's part to really push forward and finding ways to both pay for this and plan for its development.
Thank you.
Thank you for the patience.
Mr. Parker.
Thank you. Terry Parker, Northeast Portland. And I've got some of my neighbors here on both sides of me, for the most part, even though we don't totally agree. The $35.9 million price tag is not about peanuts. My chief concerns are equity and self-sustainability. Per metro, with indirect costs factored in, motorists pay for about 60% of the costs of driving. Per other sources, close to 90% of the cost for roadway infrastructure comes from motorist-paid fuel taxes, license, registration, and other motorist-paid user fees. Additionally, about 10% of the jobs in the United States are directly tied to the auto industry, one of the primary reasons President Obama extended the stimulus loans to the auto industry during the height of the present and lingering recession. Currently, one less motorist and one more bicyclist is one less transportation taxpayer, multiplied several times over, equates to one less job. Looking back at history, you get a history lesson today, beginning in 1878 and following their U.S. commercial manufacture, bicycles became a common form of transportation in Portland. With bicycling becoming trendy, there was a desire to keep bicycles off the streets and sidewalks. That led to the idea of bicycle paths between the street and sidewalk. In 1896, the United Wheelmen's Association was organized, in part to promote the construction of paved bike paths. Lacking any funding, and with the support of the Portland Bicycle Group, in 1899, Multnomah County initiated a bicycle licensing program, including for out-of-state and other Oregon bicycles used in the county. All bicycles found without license tags were seized until payment was made. Fast forward to today, and somewhere with the advent of the automobile, before the past few decades when specialized bike lanes began appearing on Portland streets, the vision and self-respect of adult bicyclists paying their own way became lost. Today, bicyclists want to be given preferential treatment and infrastructure while expecting somebody else to fund the price tag. Providing bicycle infrastructure is not a right, yet it has become a vast entitlement program, welfare for bicyclists regardless of income. If the Sullivan's Gulch Trail is to be constructed, it is imperative that equity and fairness prevail. The adult bicycling community needs to be assessed for any of the local and or state dollars allocated. This back-to-the-future approach, funding approach can be done with either an unbiased bicycle license and registration fee and or by making the Sullivan's Gulch Trail a toll facility, similar in reverse to the Columbia River Crossing, where with such a plan, adult bicyclists only would pay a toll for their use of the corridor. Moreover, requiring adult bicyclists to pay for bicycle infrastructure has a reality check similarity to property owners paying for improving gravel streets through an LID. The Sullivan's Gulch Trail has plenty of merit, but only when the bicycling community is willing to accept the financial responsibility and pay for it with user fees. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, welcome back.
Hi there. My name is Bob Richardson, and I'm a member of the Sullivan's Gulch Trail Committee. And there's so much to say about this trail, so forgive me if I talk a little fast. I'm also from the Rose City Park neighborhood, and I'm a homeowner just two blocks from the proposed neighborhood connection at 61st and near the MAX station there. And a word that gets overused when people promote projects, I'm going to be guilty of overusing that now, that is transformative. But I think in this case, it really applies. If you look at our existing highway trails, like along I-205, those are a good idea, but they serve low-density areas which are far apart. So that limits their utility. If I-84 were built today, this trail that we're talking about would likely be mandated. And we wouldn't be talking about it as an optional extra that we have to go seeking funding for. Currently, the inner and central east side neighborhoods actually have poor connections to the east, to Gateway, across 82nd, and I-205, even though there are a large number of bicycle users who would like to look east and connect to our regional center at Gateway. So this plan, this trail, fills in a lot of missing links. Something that I brought up at almost every meeting, kind of beat it to death, was the idea of build for success. Look at the East Bank Esplanade. Early on, some people called it a boondoggle. They're, who's going to use it? What's it going to serve? Now it's just packed with users. On a sunny day, there's people out there using it for things you never would have imagined. You know, the 4th of July just packs them in. All kinds of events happen. And so we must build this in anticipation of success. And what you have in front of you is a blueprint for a moderately successful nuts and bolts trail that's going to get the job done. But I encourage you not to value engineer it beneath that. I think this is a realistic plan, but we should look for ways to expand it rather than contract, to provide opportunities for families, for non-commuting users, for contemplative spaces as well. Even though it's alongside a freeway, there are spots where it can provide very interesting connections to neighborhood. And finally, I would like to encourage you to build the public right-of-way segments ASAP. Build them to the quality and scale of the full trail so the public can experience directly the vision for the completed trail. So don't just put down some asphalt on the public right-of-way and say, this is sort of kind of what it's going to be like someday. Build it right, high quality from the very beginning. Speaking somewhat selfishly for the area I live in, the Jonesmore segment would be particularly helpful in filling in missing links between the Rose City Park neighborhood and 82nd Avenue. And as recommended in the resolution, I support the I-205 undercrossing connector at Gateway Green. Thank you very much.
Mayor, may I just ask a question? Since you served on the committee, and I appreciate your comments about contemplative spaces and places for families, was there much discussion about potential conflicts between cyclists, commuter cyclists going fast, and pedestrians?
And there was a lot of discussion about that. And if you look along the map, there are areas where the right-of-way is rather constrained, and so you're looking at a trail that's only a certain width, especially where it goes under the bridges and so forth. But there are also opportunities where it widens out. So you may have places where people kind of have to hustle through, but then they get to the other side, and you can provide a wider path or places of interest. In the innermost segment through the Lloyd District, we talk about an upper trail and a lower trail. And a lot of that has to do not just with local access versus a through route, but also the grade, the height difference, and the accessibility. And so this serves more than that. In answer to your question, people who are just strolling along the trail would probably take the upper part. We're providing double the capacity in that what should be a heavily used close-in segment.
Thank you. And was there any discussion of having some separation between pedestrians and bicyclists?
There was, but it's not fully reflected in this document. This is more of if you had to pick an alignment and you had to get from point A to point B in a high-quality way, what would it look like? And so me personally, I'm hoping that we can find ways to go even beyond this.
So there may be some the intention is there may be some refinement as each section is done?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Do you mind if I answer that for you, Commissioner Fritz?
I'm going to let her speak.
Hi, my name is Tamara DeRitter. I am the Land Use and Transportation Chairperson for Rose City Park. And as you can see, we've got at least two members of our committee here. And Bob was our representative for Sullivan Gulch. Just wanted to let you know we wholly support the Sullivan Gulch Trail as being proposed. I want to address three points. One is access, the second is health, and the third is opportunity. Access being provided to our neighborhood is incredibly important. We've got three points according to this design. One is on 61st, as he mentioned. The other one is on 53rd, and the other one is at 49th, which will connect to Fraser Park, which has a community garden.
Thanks to you.
Thanks to both of us. And we have... Again, this leads into health, because people who need access to a community garden will actually have more access with this bike way being placed in. Also, one concern that has been brought up over and over again is air quality. One of the items that or depictions in this design shows trees on either side of the trail, and I want to support that concept, because right now there's no breakage or vegetation between many of our homes and I-84, and a lot of the pollution, diesel, various carcinogenic matter comes up from that area, and I have concern for the cyclists as well as the rest of the neighborhood. So a linear park is something we've talked about, and maybe adding this to a linear park system could help. Third is the opportunity that it creates for our neighborhood, and we've envisioned having a kind of a cycling magnet area right around the 60th Street station. There's an opportunity area with a lot of the industrial lands just south of Normandale Park. We would like to make that into Bike Central for the north and south commuters. And so a way in which we can start small businesses, develop basic small industries that could feed off one another, an incubator place. And we see that as a real opportunity for all of us in being able to get around the community. A couple ideas for funding. One is smart communities through Department of through EPA, and we can tap into funding there, as well as one of the concerns that has been in our agenda over and over again. The bike trail that's being proposed was not placed in this gully when the I-84 went in, and it should have been. It was part of the mandate, and it should have been placed in when light rail went in, and it didn't get placed. So part of this is correcting old behavior that was not sensitive to bicycles. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Mr. Perkins, you wanted to answer that question?
Thank you. That was a very good question, because we've been, since the very beginning, asking ourselves, well, you know, what is this path or corridor best for what group? Clearly, it makes more sense as a commuter run for bicyclists. But as Bob mentioned, that if we can provide places, oases nearby, especially up away from the freeway where you don't get a lot of noise, it would make the best advantage for little gathering spaces for pedestrians as well.
But the plan is actually a multimodal. It's for
pedestrians.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all. Appreciate your testimony. You. Anybody else? All right. Questions for staff? Sue, so would you please call the vote?
Saltzman.
Well, this is a great plan, and I look forward to it coming to fruition one day. So I guess just a couple questions that staff can answer for me later, but there was talk about this not becoming a bike freeway, so everything seems to sound like it is primarily a bike freeway, so I guess I'd like to get a better handle on that. And then 64% of the right-of-way is owned by the railroad. I didn't hear much discussion about where that right-of-way is, and I don't know if that was in the drawings or not, so how do we overcome that by all accounts? Usually an obstacle, the railroad. Anyway, this is a great plan, and look forward to seeing it work. Aye.
Leonard.
This is a great plan, and I appreciate Commissioner Fish leading this effort along with Mayor Adams. Aye.
Fritz.
This is indeed a triumph of community activism, as Brad Perkins mentioned, and Brad and others in Solomon's Gulch, Linda Robinson and others at the other end in Hazelwood have worked long and hard on this and indeed have advocated to make it happen in partnership with the staff and with Metro, with Commissioner Fish and Mayor Adams. So it's a good plan, and I'm excited to see it. I will be watching and hoping that we can indeed make it multimodal so that it serves a lot of uses. I think that'll be a way to get more funding for it also. So I'm very happy that we've gotten this far. Congratulations. Aye.
Fish.
First, I want to again thank the stellar staff team that's been working on this. And I was reflecting earlier just on all the things that Parks and Transportation are actually working on. It's, you know, just not that long ago they started working on dedicated parks for people on skateboards, looking at off-road cycling opportunities throughout the system, Gateway Green, trails, all kinds of opportunities. And I think it's fair to say that this sort of illustrates the point of how well the two bureaus work together and how well they mesh. But we've got terrific people at the table. So to Paul and to Sarah and Denver, Elizabeth, Alejandro, the whole team has been working on this. Thank you. Thanks for your outstanding work. And I run into Paul from time to time on the street, and invariably he's got some new idea, some new concept about this particular project that he's been thinking about. So we appreciate the passion and the collaborative work that you all have brought to this. I want to thank the Project Advisory Committee and both the people that are here today and the ones that are not for all the time and energy they put into this. Your work product is terrific. And I want to just take a moment, because we had a history lesson earlier, just to go back to Olmsted.